This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Happy Veterans Day to us all, to all the vets out there. Thank you so much for your service. You can be a part of this program, 855-752-4842. Jazz as hell to introduce our friend Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Friend of ours, one of my favorite socialist Democrats. I'm not sure. I don't want to speak for you, Harvey, but I've been thinking about you, brother. How you doing, man?
Hold on one second.
Get your ears in. Got to get your ears in.
I should plug in. Jess said she heard me fine, but just in case.
Yes, going to make it perfect for the people. You sound great, Harvey. Welcome, man. How you doing after this election, man?
I'm not happy, I can tell you that. Come on. I am not happy, not happy at all. At first I was literally emptied of any kind of emotion. By the end of the day, I was decidedly angry, and I'm channeling my energy by writing a piece regarding David Brooks, the New York Times columnist, because he came out in his column the morning after the election and said that he was, well, basically, among other things, he said that maybe the Democrats, you know, should try to remember that they were the party that combats inequality, number one. And then he went on to say, which was really curious, that keep in mind he's a conservative columnist. He went on to say that maybe it's time the Democrats, maybe they should have already done it, it's time the Democrats talk about really doing some Bernie action if they can get back in. Might make him uncomfortable, but it seems to be the only way to address the class divide in this country.
You know, it's hard for me to comprehend, and I think there's a lot of different things to look at, but just on a macro level, Harvey, that the answer for the working class is to put in a billionaire for president. I mean, doesn't it seem to be kind of like the one of the reasons why we are in the position that we are is because of the billionaire class, and that perhaps the wages, real wages, haven't gone up in 50 years for working class folks because of the billionaire class, because of the way our economy is structured? It seems to me that there's a disconnect there somewhere, Harvey. What do you think?
Yeah, it's decidedly a disconnect. And In the case of David Brooks, his argument was that the Democrats had become so elitist that they had literally robbed working people of respect, and it was time they addressed that. I'm not going to go into my critique of it right the second, but I do think that it's in some ways it's not surprising, because one thing you really have to remember, if you don't mind my going back a little bit. Mm-hmm. In 2016, there were two folks who offered alternatives to their respective parties. Donald Trump offered an alternative to the Republicans, and Bernie Sanders offered an alternative to the establishment Democrats. What's curious is that the party that ended up giving way to the dissenter, the dissident, people might say the radical, I'd like to call it the reactionary in the Republican Party. They'd already gotten pretty far to the right, but he was going to take them even further in favor of enriching the rich and so on. That, you know, they basically embraced Donald Trump. They didn't like it, but they did so. In the case of the Democratic Party, both in 2016 and 2020, the Democratic establishment went out of their way to block Bernie Sanders. In 2016, they were eager not only to block Bernie, but to block the forces that were with him. And in 2020, they rallied behind Biden, who was the loser in the primaries. I mean, he was a loser. Yeah. In fact, all the other Democrats were essentially losers. Bernie wasn't romping as he had before, but he was definitely the likeliest winner. And I actually believe he could have won. So it's kind of ironic. Well, the thing is that Americans in 2015-16 actually told pollsters, I was going to look for it before we came on and I forgot to do so. They told pollsters they actually wanted radical change in America. It wasn't always clear as to what they meant by that, but what that implied is they were absolutely fed up with the party establishment.
Right.
And so the Republicans go with Trump and the Democrats went with Hillary Clinton. And undeniably, she got the majority, not the majority. Well, yeah, she got, you know, the larger popular vote.
Yeah.
Popular vote. Thank you. But it was also the case that she lost Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, which cost her the election in the Electoral College. Well, here we are today. And what do we have? We have all of these years. We've practically had an age of Trump in the sense that he's sort of cultivated the anger and the hostility and the fear and, you know, the divisions. But he did so in a way that seemed to excite a vast number of people. Now, this time it was even more surprising because across the board in every sector except African Americans, Trump and the Republicans saw an increase in their vote. Having said that, let's not forget this was not a red wave. Okay? It was not a red wave. The problem is the Democrats lost the vote.
Well, but Harris did not do as well as Biden did, right?
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, yeah. The Democrats lost, especially in the case of Harris. I mean, she lost, what was it, like 14 million votes that Biden previously had picked up? No, so I think the vote, people who were going to vote for Trump were, in a way, they were already there. But on top of that, they were really kind of fed up with the Democrats telling them how good the economy was when they knew otherwise. And in some ways, I've read, you know, that Harris has good reason to at least take pride in the fact that she came back from what was a real deficit in for the Democrats in this country. However, it's also the case that she lost. Okay, I mean, you know, she lost. Period. A lot of people say, well, you can't elect a woman, or you can't elect a woman of color. I think it's the case that, basically speaking, the Democrats were working from a real deficit. And it was hard to climb out of that deficit. On top of which, she moved to the center during her campaign.
Right.
I mean, why would you move to the center when everyone knows that everybody that people are looking for a change?
Well, I mean, and that's a good point. And perhaps it was tried to show the compromise and build the coalition. You know, and I get that. I'm not clear on Harvey. I want your opinion. Did the effort to bring out Liz Cheney, and I would say it's one thing to bring her out and have her endorse you. It's another thing to go on the road on a tour. You know what I'm saying? You can have someone in the band for like one show, but if you're going to bring them out on the tour, man, it's a whole different thing. And then on top of, you know, the celebrity vote, you know, a lot of very rich, talented people getting behind Harris. Do you think that kind of turned off? And one more thing besides that, the bros, everyone's the bro. There were the Bernie bros, and some of those Bernie bros didn't show up for Clinton, you know, last time around. And perhaps that terminology, and I know it's ironic to say that name calling and all that would impact people, but maybe it did. What's your take on that?
Okay, I mean,
there's a lot, Harvey. We got a lot of time.
You just
man.
Said a lot of things. Let me take up the first. The Liz Cheney question.
Yes.
I never quite grasped why she was taking up Liz Cheney stuff when anyone who was a decent Republican was probably not going to vote for Trump. Okay. I mean, they weren't going to, but to bring her to the state of Wisconsin really and go on the road when what she really needed to do was go on the road with, you know, with labor leaders, get Bernie to go. I mean, Bernie had been a supporter of Biden. Then he backed Harris. Take him on the road with you. I don't see any problem with a celebrity like Taylor Swift or otherwise endorsing. I don't think that cost them. But I'm not so sure it necessarily drew all the more people to vote for. I mean, that's not clear. But I don't think, let's put it this way. Going on the road with Cheney meant that she could not go on the road with certain other people.
Yeah.
And I think that was a mistake.
The opportunity cost was great.
Boy, you're good. That's a good way of putting it. The opportunity cost. That's right.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvi Show. That's Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Some of the other reflections, Harvey, Biden got out too late. You buying it?
Oh, absolutely. No. You know, I tried
to
resist.
So it's all Biden's fault. Harvey, come on,
well,
man.
No, wait. He absolutely did get out too late. Okay. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt. And I can tell you that, I mean, I was never a huge fan of Biden's or Harris's. Neither one of them were my candidates going into 2020. However, I thought, to my surprise, he at least made an effort to do the kinds of things that needed doing. I think he could have done a lot better if he had learned something from all those years in the Senate as to how you convince people to do things. Like, you know, presidents can bribe senators. And I don't mean you hand them money in their own pockets, but there are ways of getting to them, okay? Kyrsten Sinema, I used to say all the time, why don't they offer her an ambassadorship somewhere, okay? Get her out of the Senate now. I mean, I think they failed in many ways to both manipulate certain people and also, if you like, to show working people that they were fighting for them rather than retreat from the questions when they realized they couldn't get all the votes they needed. I mean, I don't think it was a fantastic president, but I also worried, I really did worry that if he pulled out late in the spring, when basically it was too late for a primary, that the Democrats were literally going to be, you know, called, you know, cowards, you know, in that situation. And I've heard about some stories about the battles between the Biden and Harris forces. Yeah. That probably didn't help things all either. Right. I do think he got out too late. You know what? I also couldn't believe how people thought that he was losing it during the spring last year. I mean, I honestly couldn't believe it. I thought surely his advisors would have urged him out earlier then. But then when I saw certain events and I didn't see the debate.
Oh, man, that was tough, dude. That was tough. Yeah. Yeah, that was an indicator for me. 60 seconds left in this segment, Harvey. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, he definitely got out too late. But, you know, there are a lot of things. I mean, look, nobody asked me what I thought they should do.
I'm asking you, Harvey.
And that's the biggest problem.
Okay. I think the Democrats should have been far more aggressive in office. And I think they should have been far more aggressive on the campaign trail. And they should have come across sounding like fighters. And even if it took a bit of an apology to the American people for their failure to come out fighting before that.
Folks, you are listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That's Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Do we have a democracy anymore? And what is the future of the Democratic Party? Coming back with Harvey K. and your calls, 855-752-4842.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, thanks for sticking around. Teasing you a little bit before we went into the break, but I want to get some texters out here quick. Steady Eddie says, Harvey, too much Monday evening quarterbacking. And I got to say, Eddie, that's why we brought him in, man. This is what we're doing. We're Monday morning quarterbacking.
It's going to be a lot of that, Eddie.
Right.
Well, and by the way, I'm entitled to Monday morning quarterback because I worked for 2 years in trying to get the Democrats to pay more attention to the kinds of things that FDR wanted for Americans and made possible in many ways for Americans. And the Democratic Party turned their back on those very things and the working people who backed FDR. I mean, right now, the Democratic Party has major apologies to make, especially to the generation that provided Social Security and a host of other things that we've come to value as we do.
Harvey, in anticipation of our time together today, I had texted you an article from Michael Cohen, an MSNBC contributor, and he was responding to Bernie Sanders, and Bernie Sanders put out a press release, and he kind of lit up the Democratic Party, and Bernie Sanders concludes with, "Will the big money interests and well-paid consultants who control the Democratic Party learn any real lessons from this disastrous campaign?" Do they have any ideas as to how we can take on the increasingly powerful oligarchy, which has so much economic and political power? Probably not. Now, Cohen, taking issue with that, Harvey, said this: "During his nearly 4 years in office, Biden was arguably the most pro-union president since FDR. He literally walked the picket line, supported union organizing efforts, increased funding for the National Labor Relations Board. He infused $36 billion in the Teamsters Union Pension Plan. Then there was his infrastructure technology investments, which stand to create thousands of new jobs on top of student loan relief for community college graduates, overtime pay reforms, and numerous other pro-worker policies." Cohen goes on. But Harvey, I'm with you, but seemingly, those are some pretty pro-working class policies and actual legislation that went through.
Oh, did I not say in the last segment that he actually ended up doing more than I expected him to do? Because, and this is why I say it had low expectations. Let me explain to you why. Because when he first... Actually, let me put this in...
Harvey, I get it.
Go ahead. Give me a moment. Okay. This is important. Before I said that David Brooks had said the Democrats had to remember and had failed to remember that they are the party that should be combating inequality. And he's a conservative.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's not even, that's only half the story. I think the Democratic Party has to remember, first of all, that the folks who canvassed through the course of all the decades since World War II, who canvassed for Democrats, were working, not just working people, they were union members. And for 50 years, the Democrats failed to defend labor effectively. And as a consequence, the ranks of labor shrunk. Therefore, you don't have the army of working people who were union members out there canvassing. That's first.
Yeah.
The other thing is, it's not just you're going to fight inequality. I mean, keep in mind, you said it yourself. 50 years, working people haven't seen a significant rise in their income, period, relative to the trillions that have been accumulated by the billionaires and millionaires. But so what I'm going to say is, for the Democrats to truly be effective, they just are not only a matter of remembering what they're supposed to combat, it's a matter of their remembering that they have to empower working people. They have to secure working people's rights more effectively. And in fact, if I were talking now to the AFL-CIO, I was going to say right now, look, they're going to be talking about where the Democratic Party should go. You folks have to get right in line and make it clear that you're not going to put up with this stuff any longer, okay? And you're going to have to push from the bottom up to make sure that people who believe in labor and the power of working people are the ones who come to direct this Democratic Party.
Folks, that is Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, I've learned in my life that lowering my expectations makes for a much, much happier life, man, I got to tell you.
Shame on you.
it just makes it easier to get through the day. I'd be like, oh, I expected that, you know, or I'm not surprised. Like, oh, Trump won. Oh, okay. Here we go. Here we go again.
You must be independently wealthy if you can say those kinds of things.
No, man. It's just I'm just so callous, and the miles have rid me raw.
No, you're
not. Living on the high of the Detroit Lions right now.
Oh,
I know,
man,
you are.
Hey, we're not going to talk about sports, but wow, what a comeback last night. I mean, 5 interceptions? Come on, come back to win it?
That was extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary.
2 field goals that barely went in at the... I mean, it was just so wonderful. Yeah. Harvey, we got a caller, and I got some more to talk about. You got time to stick around for one more segment as well? Or All right.
Yes, I'll just have to tell my wife that yeah. I won't be at dinner yet.
Yeah, right, man. We got Phil from Madison on the line. His analysis of why the Dems lost. Harvey, let's hear what he has to say. Hey, Phil, welcome. What are your thoughts?
Hey, Doug. How you doing?
Hey, what's going on, man?
Pretty good. I've been listening to Professor Harvey. I just still can't reconcile the fact that most of the Democratic base, which is the black women, voted for Kamala Harris. They went full force for Kamala Harris. The issues were all the same. What I saw was a movement, mostly of the Hispanic, a large chunk of the Hispanic voters moved towards Donald Trump.
Yep.
But the fact that the issues were the same, I don't understand why they'll say the Democrats' message wasn't going through, or the economic message wasn't going through. The black women voted entirely for Vice President Kamala Harris. The issues are the same for them as compared to other races. So I just think the movement was something different other than the economic message. Something made them move towards Trump. I don't know how you see that, Dom.
Thanks for the call, Phil. Was it more than just an economic message? I mean, in some regards, certainly it was. I mean, I think there was a sense of the fact that she was black and a woman. I mean, I literally had people with, I mean, again, anecdotal evidence of that, but people had said things in earshot of family and friends of mine who reported it back to me. I think there's a lot of that unsaid out there, Phil, but we'll get Harvey's take on the other side. 855-752-4842. This is the Dom Salvia Show. Stick around.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Jazzed as hell. Harvey K. sticking around for an extra segment. Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, I want to get into the democracy conversation, but I want to get your thoughts from our last caller, Phil. You know, wondering, the economic message, in his opinion, wasn't terrible. Were there other factors that would have played a role? Your thoughts, Harvey?
Well, this is a quick sociological analysis. First of all, I think African Americans have learned to be very aware of the threat of racism intensifying. Okay, and I think that enhanced their, if you like, affection for Kamala Harris versus Donald Trump. That's first. The other thing is that there's something underway in this country regarding the place of Mexican Americans and Latino Americans. They are in some ways apparently moving into the mainstream in quotes, people can get angry, but this is what some sociologists are seeing, that they're becoming white. Okay, not unlike the ways in which, that sounds funny, but Irish became white in the 19th century.
Yeah, acclimated to the culture and so forth. Yes.
Yeah, and Italian Americans similarly during the mid-20th century. So the other thing is, this is not unusual for generations that have already been in this country, or folks literally who are on their way to citizenship or already citizens. They're not necessarily eager. They're not necessarily eager to invite new waves of immigrants into the country. And given the mood of the country today, that's not terribly surprising. I don't have the exact polls to prove what I just said, but that's been the case historically.
Sure.
So anyhow, that's best I can do for now.
And what about democracy? I mean, you're the professor emeritus of democracy, Harvey.
Yeah.
I mean, how's democracy looking these days? I'm thinking, you know, ridden hard and put away wet, but you tell me, man.
Democracy, we are in crisis. Let's put it that way, okay? I'm hoping that in 6 months we have not actually fallen into the abyss when it comes to the question of democracy. I was saying to Jess, in fact, during the break, that we've got to think about the United States not as specifically a democracy yet, that it has always had the makings of a democracy. And we are a far, far, far more democratic nation today than we were at the time of the founding.
Right.
But it is the case that because of the nature of the founding and the promise made, well, first of all, called for by Thomas Paine in Common Sense, and then made in the Declaration of Independence, however ironic it was that these were slaveholders making this kind of statement, the fact is that the fundamental notion of equality and life and the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness has literally propelled struggles for democracy in this country for the past nearly 250 years. In fact, I do have to say that one of the things that has been very upsetting to me as someone who's so committed for all these decades to the question of democracy and the history of democracy, that it's in 250th anniversary year that Donald Trump and the Republicans are in power in this country and not a far more, in quotes, democratic party.
Harvey, does the dismantling or reorganizing of the administrative state as identified or articulated in the Project 2025, do you think that has any impact on everyday working class folks? Do they even give a damn or even know what that even entails and how it impacts them?
Partly it's almost abstract. Project 2025.
Yeah,
what can that possibly mean? Okay, and given the size of it, it was hard for anyone necessarily to embrace it. Okay, so it just seemed like one more charge the Democrats were throwing. But they will know what it's like. Believe me, if they actually pursue Project 2025 as they've promised, working people will discover what it means. They will discover it in terms of their daily living. They will discover it in terms of their situation in the workplace, and they will discover it in terms of everything from possibly their drinking water to the air they breathe.
Harvey, my thought on this, as I talk to my mega friends and my conservative friends and family, is accountability. You're right. I mean, I don't think that the policies, at least as put forth by Trump as he was out there, you know, tariffs and deportations and so on, are going to, you know, lower costs for the American people, or that they're going to raise wages for the American people. I mean, I don't know, when you talk about, you know, helping and identifying and working towards and trying to support and empower, as you said, working people, well, what does that mean? I mean, who does that all entail?
Look, he lied last time. He lied. Okay, he lied. He doesn't understand economics at all. Okay, he doesn't understand that. Sure, tariffs can work to encourage domestic industries. It definitely can work, but it can also work to raise the prices on the goods that Americans are going to be buying. Considering the fact that right now, so many of the goods Americans are buying, when they go to Walmart, which I do not shop at, but or Target or any of these other places, they're going to have to go up if there are tariffs placed on, you know, goods coming from overseas. That's not going to enhance their wages, believe me. The way wages are enhanced is by way of workers being organized and the federal government empowering the National Labor Relations Act to stand behind them. They've already promised, they've already made it clear they're going to weaken the National Labor Relations Act, which is, and the National Labor Relations Board, as they did the last time that Trump took over. And so it's hard for me to imagine that the promises he makes to working people mean anything, anything.
Dr. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of the University of Wisconsin, of Democracy, of the University of Wisconsin at Green Bay. Sooner or sooner or later it will become, they'll realize it. I would think. I mean, economically speaking, as we talked about, no raises for working class folks adjusted for inflation in 50 years. And that's through Democratic administrations and Republican administrations. I mean, I don't know at what point.
Oh, absolutely.
At what point does that strike home for folks? How do you think?
Well, can I just answer?
Yeah, please go ahead.
It struck home. Why do the Republicans? Why has Donald Trump done well two times in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin? Because working people have more of people think that working people have no memory. They remember very well the kinds of things that cost them their communities, their livelihoods, their incomes, the stabilities of their family. NAFTA and its impact on these three industrial states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, has mattered. And these people may not be able to tell you all the ins and outs of the legislation and the signings and all that, but they know damn well. They know how they were messed up by NAFTA. They know it, okay? They lived it. They lived it. They saw their incomes decline. They saw their inability to send their kids to college decrease. I mean, they know it, and they knew it. And that's what has cost the Democrats over and over again.
Well, but then they vote for Dems, it doesn't work, doesn't affect them. Vote for Republicans, it doesn't work, doesn't affect them. I mean, no wonder why there's so much disengagement, Harvey.
Yes.
It was funny, you know, even a week or two ago, we're talking about, you know, what happens to the Democratic Party, the Republican Party if Trump loses. Is there a reorganization? Is there a reflection? Does the MAGAs go away? Do they form a new party with the Never Trumpers and so on? Now, a couple weeks later, we're looking at a Trump victory and lamenting what happens to the Democratic Party. Well, let me ask you, Harvey, if we think that the policies of this administration are not going to be to the benefit to the working class folks, that those that voted for him perhaps might think it will, what is the best way to position the Democrats to not only take advantage politically of that, but also to actually deliver?
Okay. I've heard a number of interesting suggestions today. One would be, for example, that the Democrats create what's called a shadow cabinet.
Yes, that is,
that is figures within the party, specifically within the Senate and or the House, whose responsibility it is to literally watchdog every single move, okay? Because who knows what the media is going to be doing. The second, and this is
I want to watchdog Stephen Miller. I want that assignment. I mean,
do you?
Look at the folks.
Yes, you do.
Stephen Miller, Elise Stefanik, ambassador to the United Nations. Tom Homan, Trump border czar. Stephen Miller, deputy chief of staff. So you're saying that, as I've seen this as well, that the Dems come up with a shadow cabinet, basically. So everything that Stephen Miller says and does.
And I heard that before.
Yeah.
It was said back in 2016 and so on. But here's the other thing, which is more the case. Remember I said in the last segment or two segments ago that the Democrats have got to become once again the party that seeks to combat inequality, that needs not just to fight for the working class, but needs to inspire a fight in the working class. That's fundamental. I've always told candidates I've advised, if you're going to hope to win, you can't just tell people I'm going to fight for you. You've got to inspire the fight in them. Bernie did that to a great extent. Other Democrats have not done that. So here's the thing. They need to immediately start introducing legislation that admittedly won't go anywhere, but they have to make a lot of noise that they're doing so. Let working people know that the Democrats are serious now. They're not going to necessarily tell the corporate bosses nothing will change. Remember that? That was what Biden told them.
Right.
And Harris said something similar during the course of the year. And then she proved it when she brought her brother-in-law, who was the lawyer for Uber, into her campaign. And he advised her to take it easy. You don't want to be too much of a populist. No, the Democrats have got to start demonstrating they're willing to fight and they're willing to inspire the fight in working people.
Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. We got Andrew on the line from Detroit. Got to take your call, man. What a game last night, Andrew. Listen, I know you got a question, but first, what's your opinion on that comeback of the year, man?
That'd be incredible.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it was great.
God, that's fantastic, huh?
Grit, baby. It's all about the grit, Andrew. Hey, what do you got for us today?
I'm asking, how do we have a democracy, or as Javi is saying, approaching a democracy, when we do not have the rule of law anymore? I mean, the man that's going to sit in the White House, we can't go after him. And the second thing is, I love Harvey's idea of a shadow cabinet, but I think they also need to watch the white elite in the Democratic Party. The white elite in the Democratic Party now has to climb into the back seat and let Big Ma drive the car.
Thank you, Andrew. Harvey K., 2 minutes left in the segment, my friend. What are your
thoughts? My only reservation about that is that I don't buy the racial character of the white elite. I just said it was the Uber lawyer who her brother-in-law, who was an African-American, she brought in, and he was the one advising her not to take the road that I would wish that she advised. I do think, however, what we want to say is the corporate elite. The Democrats have got to learn to point the finger at the corporate elite. Bernie was in the vanguard of doing that. The rest of them have been cowardly about that. That's the kind of thing you got to do.
Harvey, in the last couple of minutes here, the rule of law. I thought, Andrew has a great question. How do we have a democracy if we don't have the rule of law, which, of course, Republicans have said they run on and believe? Last 60 seconds, Harvey, what are your thoughts?
Okay, quickly. There are times when the rule of law should not have ever been applied. That takes me back to the 19th century. I am equally concerned about it, but it also helps if the Democrats would have brought in an attorney general who believed that you make a fight over this question of the rule of law.
And you fight, and another thing they could have done earlier, I mean, they waited, 18 months to start prosecuting what was already in front of them. Harvey,
almost sounds conspiratorial, doesn't it?
It certainly does. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Hey, Harvey, thank you for your time today. I look forward to speaking to you soon. And
always a pleasure.
Keep up the good fight, my friend.
Thank you.
All right, folks, this is the Dom Salve Show. Last segment of the day, 855-752-4842.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
And welcome back to the Dom Salve Show. Last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now, 855-752-4842. I want to thank Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy, University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Always a pleasure to talk to Harvey, my favorite Democratic socialist. Socialist Democrat. I don't know. My favorite socialist. You can find him on...
He wears that title with pride.
He does. Find him on the Twitters at Harvey J.K. Harvey J.K.A.Y.E. Harvey K., thank you for coming around. And if you know, Harvey's been around here a lot over the years, and big fan of FDR. And when he did this, has a comic strip out on FDR trying to explain the history of it, and he does a great job of it. And I loved what he had to say about combating inequality, and not just say you're going to fight for somebody, but inspire them to fight as well. Rhetorically, of course. Inspire them. Stand up for yourself. Claim your rights. Claim yourself. Claim your person. And that takes a lot. And I think, but there's so much value to that. Because you can only fight as an individual so much. You can inspire people to do that. Inspire people to get involved and take charge, not only of their own, their personal endeavors, but certainly in self-governance as well. I mean, it takes a lot of time. It does. It is a dedication, but we need people involved. And there's more to be involved than just going to a Trump rally. That being said, one of the things we didn't specifically address today with Harvey, and perhaps we will in the future, the role of the media, legacy media, and religion. Now, y'all know where I'm at on the religion thing, but I don't think that can be, we can't have these conversations without addressing the religious inspiration and motivation and of some folks. And frankly, there's some really hardcore religious folks out there. I mean, if you're of the type, and I am not, as you know, that think, you know, he was saved by God, it doesn't really matter, and he's going to, you know, help push Christianity back into the classrooms, quote unquote. Doesn't really matter what the personal economics are, you know. So I think there are some things there that need to be addressed, and I don't know that I've seen a whole lot of research or articles or writing on the religious influence on this particular, and hell, all elections, and but this one in particular, and as well as the media. I mean, is it now, you know, podcasting and Joe Rogan is what people look to for the media as far as a source of unbiased ? Information? I mean, I don't know what people are looking for. There's this weird kind of combination of media, of information, of entertainment, right? Of FU-ism, let's call it. I mean, I get that. I got a little bit of that in me.
Just a little.
A little bit. But the, you know, and then it's also, you know, you relate perhaps to people like Joe Rogan and some of these other folks that have been apparently very influential, the TikTok and so forth. The problem obviously that I see with that is there's no standard. I mean, if you're a journalist, generally speaking, if you're writing for the Washington Post or the New York Times or the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Cap Times. You know, we got friends. We reference those articles quite a bit. If those folks are going to put some BS out there, and again, there's a difference between a fact reporting piece and opinion pieces, folks, remember that. There would be consequences to just loading up a bunch of BS. You get fired for that kind of stuff. There are no consequences if you're just, you know, tuning into your IP address to your podcaster and they're just feeding a bunch of BS and you don't question it, you don't care, it sounds right to you, and it just goes on, becomes fact in your minds. That silo and without a pushback, I think is also problematic. And I'm not clear how legacy media addresses that. Obviously, a lot of legacy media, those folks have their own podcasts and so forth, but certainly not to the degree and not to the influence that we've seen, at least in this election cycle. 855-752-4842. Let's squeeze in Cindy from Appleton. You will have the word. What do you got, Cindy?
Well, I wish we'd find a different word than fight, because to me, fight is a very negative word. It's a very divisive word. I wish they'd get into words like persevere and tenacity and persistence and endurance and things like that, because fight to me is such a negative connotative word.
Got to fight for your right to party. I mean, what do you think? Brawl? What would you rather have? How do you describe, you know, pushing back against, you know, a political belief that you find problematic? What would you use? I'm down. I get it. I mean, fight is, I agree with you. Absolutely. I just don't know what would, you know, stand in. Like some words, the F word is very, very versatile. Fight is an F word. It's not very versatile. It describes what we're doing. We're fighting. We're fighting for democracy, right? We're standing up to democracy. What would you like to say, Cindy? I'm down. Help me out.
Resist.
Oh, what That's if you're ahead, though? What if you're ahead? Then you're defending?
Well, we're certainly not ahead right now.
Well, now with that attitude, Cindy, hey, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate you listening. I want to thank our guest today, Wisconsin State Senator-elect Jody Habesh-Sinikin from the 8th District. Congratulations, Jody, as mentioned, a bright light in an otherwise dreary election cycle. Actually, Wisconsin did okay. The maps were good. We picked up some seats. We'll keep on fighting there. Ben Wickler did a good job here in Wisconsin. I actually did see his name mentioned for the national DNC in some articles this weekend. I tried not to read, I promise. Also, got to thank Harvey K. Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. Thank you, Jess P.S., for everything you do. Thank you to our fair audience. Stick around. Nightlight with P. Schwabba is coming up next. I will see you tomorrow. Overtime with Matt on 4 o'clock.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.